Psychotherapist Richard Hogan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
Okay, so Richard, Christmas is coming. Lots to navigate, everything from family to finances. In a broad sense, first, Christmas is supposed to be a happy time.
But we talk about time.
Surviving Christmas. How did you get over the Christmas?
Yeah, absolutely. I meet families this time of the year, and you can really sense them in the clinic, sitting down, you know, in a room with them, the pressure that's on them. And I meet them then in January, and I'm always struck, and that's why I write this column every December about how to survive, how to manage yourselves, how to manage financially, but how to manage interpersonal relationships with your family, and also how to manage your child's expectations. Because in January, what I meet are families with that sense of like, we got through this thing, we survived it. There's a real sense of relief. And that's kind of incongruent to how we should be experiencing Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. I think enforced happiness is a bad idea in general.
It's like, not great.
Happiness occurs between the cracks when you least expect it.
Exactly.
Kind of thing. But like to be told you will now be happy.
It's like spontaneous fun.
Yeah. So listen, okay, you mentioned family. I suppose family of origin is a big thing for people around Christmas. All these adults come back together. Suddenly these ancient dynamics kick in.
Yeah,
everybody
absolutely.
Knows how to push everyone's buttons and all that. How do we stop that from happening, or is it possible?
It's funny because I'm just finishing a book at the moment, and it's all about the family, where you come in the family, and that, you know, that first, second, third, fourth, wherever you come in that family. The thing is, when you say for you're the eldest, the youngest, the middle child, whatever, when you go back into that family dynamic, you step right back into that childhood place where you've been, you know, positioned, and where you were, let's say, labeled, or, you know, you're walking back into that, and it can cause all sorts of problems. And so what I often say to parents and to, you know, adults when I meet them, they're going back into a particularly maybe problematic family, is to kind of really take, almost like Elvis looking in the mirror, and take a moment to kind of go, you know, gee yourself up for it, and allow people to be themselves, and for you to analyse, you know, about, I suppose what I'm trying to say is that we often get into lots of problems on Christmas Day. 5 o'clock is actually the most problematic time of Christmas Day, research would
say. Why is that?
I suppose the dinner is probably just after happening, and people are sitting down relaxing, and there's a little bit of the, you were kind of, you know, geeing yourself up for it, and all of a sudden you're relaxing a little bit more, and maybe something gets said, right? And all of a sudden then you're back into that earlier skin. And that's what I'm trying to talk about there, that we can step back into the earlier skin of ourselves. And it's important to understand, first of all, what I always say to people is, when you have a really difficult relationship with a brother or a sister or a family member, right, and you've been avoiding them all year, let's say, Christmas forces you together. And so this might be a bit disturbing for people to think about, but think about that person you're in conflict with, right? And think about maybe that they're reflecting something about yourself that you don't like. And if you sit down with that for a moment and say, what is it about my sibling, or what is it about the person that I have this difficulty with? How can I manage that a bit different? And if I was to look at it in a different way, would the relationship be a little bit better? Would I be able to manage myself in this interaction a little bit better? Or am I looking for, you know, which we call cognitive bias, am I looking for slights? Am I tuned in for their slight when they say something to me about, oh, pass the salt, but it's in a way that I don't like because they're always talking down to me. And so you're looking and you're listening out for offence, let's say. And it's like,
yeah, because some people are geeing themselves up for this from now, like from the start of December. They're talking about
late November, they're geeing themselves up.
So a lot of it is ourselves and how we bring ourselves.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say, that, and we have to let all the stuff go as well. It's easier said than done, Brendan, but we have to really kind of step back a little bit from this and allow people, and, you know, again, try to watch that. If you're listening for offence all the time, you're going to hear it. You know, if you think say Sarah doesn't particularly like me, she's always making jibes at me or whatever, you're sitting there and you're passing around the quality street or whatever, you know, you're going to be listening for offence that Sarah's going to say to you, and you're going to hear it. And so it's about stepping in with a new lens and a new ear to the situation.
Okay, so just let's be really practical here now. When you're in the situation, okay, people are in that situation and something's been said, and like you can feel your blood pressure rising and everything. How do you step back there?
I would always say this, and this is the key here. We've got hot cognition and cold cognition.
Okay.
And so when you say something like, that's Brendan typically always put me down, right? And you say something and I'm sitting there livid in the room and I want to jump back with you. Your cognition is now hot. That is not the right time to respond to something. How many times do we respond to something like that hot and we leave and go, I let myself down there a little bit? Shouldn't have said that. Why did I say that? Because the person is bringing up an awful lot of historical, you know, mess there that we have with that person. So you respond very quickly to bite back at them. And I would say, always step away from it. Respond when your cognition is colder.
Literally get up and maybe walk out.
I would say, actually, take a break from go to the toilet, go out into the garden, go for a little walk and have a think. And so your cognition will calm down. And then you can actually make a really nice way of, an informed way of responding. Because when our cognition is hot, we don't respond with the neocortex. We're responding there immediately. We launch back out defensively and we say something terrible.
Yeah. People are thinking, "Oh, okay, that makes sense. I'm going to do that."
A lot of walks going on around Christmas.
Kettle of fish when they're in the situation. So I suppose you remember one thing: get up, walk away. Like if you can have one thing in your head, we're not. And that stuff does it takes over people almost like a physical.
You're
saying that's all the past.
It's all simmering there away, you know. And someone says something to you that really. But, you know, it's like scraping that scab. All of a sudden, all that stuff is right there in the room. You're 5 years of age. You're back inside the skin of that kid again. And that person, your sibling or your parent, whatever it is there dominating you as you perceive it. And so you're going to lash out now to save that child. And all of a sudden, the Christmas descends into chaos. Yeah. And people are left wondering, well, what was that about? I only asked them this. You know, you go, well, it's a historic, it's there. That's 30, 40 years.
And it's about dominance. Yeah, it's like almost like a lot of it is like,
that.
A lot of it is
about the position in the family. So the youngest might feel that they were never validated or never taken seriously, and the oldest might feel that they were always given too much responsibility as a kid, and the youngest one is, you know, always so easygoing and laid back, and he got everything or she got everything, and the youngest one is thinking he was always trying to be dominant, she was always the one, and she's such a boss and she's always so in charge. And so when someone says, "Can you pass the fork there at the Christmas dinner?" You're not going to boss me there.
And everyone's right, really.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. If you go in with a new lens, you can actually start to see everyone's perspective.
Okay. We don't have the same level of historical baggage with the in-laws, but a lot of people can find that tricky enough as well.
It is, yeah, absolutely. And I would say that's a really dangerous landscape to be navigating. It's really important that we watch that one, because when we speak negatively about our in-laws to our partner, that's their parents. You know, and they love them, and they were born with that innate love. And it's generally, you know, it's very hard to come back from it. And so I would always say, you need a good sensory board up here for what you say and how you know in your relationship with people and how they are, you know, and how, you know, what kind of people they are and what their sense of humor is. And you have to be careful there, because a lot of things can get said around Christmas that, you know, it remains in the system that are residual for a long time.
Okay. So what I'm hearing there's no easy answer to that.
There's
one
not easy answer.
You have to manage that one really
you have
carefully.
You have to think about the people you have to always think about the people you're in a relationship with. We're always in this interconnected, reciprocal process of communication with people. And so we have to think about the interlocutor, the other person in that communication. What are they like? What's their sense of humor? What, you know, if I'm going to make a joke or a rude joke, it mightn't go down so well with the people. And so you're you know, with your in-laws, so it's important to think about who you are, who you have in front of you there.
And of course, with your own family, any kind of trash talk can be said between you and people who moved on 5 minutes later, but it's not quite the same with other people.
That's what I'm trying to say to you. You can have that, you know, a WhatsApp group with your family. It's all joke and messing. With your in-laws, it mightn't be the same sense of humour. You grew up with that sense of humour. And that's what I'm trying to say, is that be careful of who you're talking, you know, what they're like.
Yeah. Am I hearing across all this as well, that great old adage of don't take anything personally?
Well, I think take everything. If you could get a little, a really important skill as a human being is to be a little bit, have a little bit more levity about things, you know?
There you go.
Can we take things so bloody seriously?
Yeah.
And we're waiting for offence. I think we're in the age of offence anyway. So we're looking for someone to say something to put us down, and everything is so serious and there's no more humour around. There's no self-deprecation. There's no laughing at yourself. And so everything is so serious. You have to take me very seriously and I have to take you very seriously. If we just could get a little bit more levity into our life, we could enjoy the Christmas spirit, because we know we don't communicate perfectly, Brendan. And when we've had we're sitting down after dinner and we might have a drink, we certainly don't communicate perfectly. And we might say the wrong thing, and we shouldn't be so in tuned to that and to be over, you know, really struck by that and offended by that. It's important.
Okay, that's a great one to go into. I would just decide, like, don't take myself seriously and don't take any of this.
This is all absurd anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
The whole thing is absurd.
Yeah. Like everything.
Everything is absurd. This whole thing is absurd.
Yeah,
I mean, life is absurd.
You freak me out.
But it is. Yeah. I mean, Christmas is absurd. Let's see.
Okay. Speaking of the absurdity of Christmas, then, the kids' expectations every year becoming more and more.
Oh my God! I mean, there's a real psychological aspect to this now, and I think it's really important that parents hear this. You know, it's not just about not making your child spoiled. I don't think any of us want to, you know, make our children spoiled and have all those expectations. But there's a psychological aspect to this, that you know, gratitude is a positive psychological characteristic, that it's connected to well-being. And so what that means now, there's loads of research around this. The more your child is grateful, the more they've got gratitude in their lives, the happier they're going to be in their life. And we're in the age, I mean, I think nothing exemplifies where we are currently as a species as the selfie. Everything is pointing inwards. And so we have to help our kids to stop looking so in, because we know the thoughts about the self are statistically statistically going to be
negative
emotions, right? And so we have to help our children to look outwards.
Yes.
And so when they're consumed by me, I don't know about you, Brendan, but I have three daughters and I've been to a lot of birthday parties over the years. And you can see kids just unwrapping present after present after present. And it's this joyless endeavor, this futile kind of endeavor. And you kind of go, oh my God, that child, when are they going to experience some joy now? Because it's just like wrap, throw away. You're going to go, and you have to develop in your child gratitude. Where does that come from? No. You know, it comes from them not getting everything. And I think parents of our generation who grew up in the 70s and 80s, who didn't get much, right? Let's be honest, it wasn't a time of bounty and you were getting all these presents.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of ameliorated that, or we as a corollary to that, we started giving our kids more and more and more. And of course, there's this $1 trillion industry around us pushing us, kind of going, give them more and more and more and more. And that would make them happier. And what we're actually developing in them is the ability not to experience joy at all in their lives. And it's really important. And this is a great season to do that with your children. I do it with mine all the time.
We don't want to be unpopular with our kids, though, you know.
That's the problem, you see. And that is, so you hit the nail on the head. And we have to at times be unpopular with our kids because we're not their best friends. And this is what I say to parents all the time. We can't be their best friends, because you don't tell your best friend to stop eating chocolate and to go to bed and to get up and brush your teeth. And that's what we're in charge of, the well-being of these young people as they go off and develop into their lives. That's an incredible responsibility. So you can't be in there secretly as their best friends, because that's their best friend's place to be with them. We have to be there above them in this little meta position, holding them and teaching them and helping them to manage themselves, so that when they go off into life, they can experience joy. They're grateful for what comes into their lives, and they can make good decisions when we're not around, so we develop their critical thinking. These are all really important, massively important things.
So you need to be able to take a short-term hit there of being the worst person in the world.
You have to be able to, you have to become more comfortable. I think this is a message I'd say to all parents. We have to become more comfortable with our children's discomfort at times.
Okay. You have a nice story I saw you wrote about Cluck and Collect. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we go out to Lucan every Christmas to collect the turkey from this farm in Athlone that drop it down. They come down every Christmas, and we've been doing it now for nearly, I'd say, 12 years. And my daughter said to me one day, because we're going to collect the turkey, and she's like, are we going to get the cluck and collect? Mm. Right? And now it's become this family joke all the time that we're going. And that's the kind of stuff about memories. You know, if I said this to you, Brendan, right? Tell me all the presents you remember that you got for Christmas. Can you?
No, I'd be hard pressed. Yeah.
I'd be hard pressed too. I might remember a bicycle once. You know, I might remember that one bike, whatever. Now, this is the key for parents.
I remember I got this kind of plane, you shot out of it.
You pushed it.
And my brother grabbed it off me and shot it up into the woods, and that was the end of it.
That was the end of it. But you remember that.
That says it all, I think.
But you see what I'm saying to you there? It's not, we don't remember the presents.
Yeah.
We really don't. We remember the cluck and collect. We remember the vibe. We remember the feelings. We remember what we were feeling at the time.
Yeah.
Right? We don't remember, oh my God, remember I got that. So our memories aren't connected to like materialism. And this season, I know it's, you know, there's a great joy, Christmas, kids coming down and they get their present, all that. But it's not what they remember. It's not the presents. It's the feeling. It's the vibe being with the family sitting down. That's the connection.
And little rituals.
Little rituals
in
the
a
cluck and collect that we do.
Years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That. Like, I'm looking forward to that. We're talking about that again recently, going out to get, and we get the kids call it apple cider. It's only apple juice, but it's apple cider in the family. And you know, we go out and get apple juice from the farm, and we get the turkey from the farm, and that I can see the tradition building. I can see them talking amongst themselves about it. How many apple juices are you going to get? I can see the Christmas tradition developing in their head. They'll go off into their lives. They'll build their own traditions. And when you look back later on, you watch a movie like, you know, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, you remember how you felt at that time. It's not about what you were getting. You remember the feeling in the family and the emotions and the good vibes in the family.
Oh, God, you're going to make me cry now. And even stuff we thought was boring at the time, actually, if those,
comes
those
back in,
traditional visits you did, and
absolutely,
that kind of thing, actually. They're precious. Precious stuff. Okay, look, on a more practical level, right, the money end of Christmas, and, you know, there are people, you know, that kind of perfect Christmas that everyone's aiming for. There are people who are going to get into debt for Christmas and then end up with a credit card hangover or whatever in January.
The first thing I would say, I would challenge the idea that a perfect Christmas is, like, you know, rooted in materialism. And the second thing is, I'd say to people, and I meet this in my clinic a lot, is that be careful where you take your money from, let's say. There's like a credit cards and that are terrible things because they're so high in interest rates and all that. And so you place an incredible burden on you. And I always think that it's not April isn't the cruelest month. I always think January is the cruelest month. Mm. I think January can be a really terrible time. And that's what I'd say to parents. How much can you, and I see this a lot now, how much can you enjoy Christmas when you realise the tsunami of debt is coming down the line? You know, when you're there with your family, right, like 3 weeks from now, there's going to be a serious bill for me to meet, right? A lot of people don't get paid till the end of January, at the end of the month. That's a long space of time. And so it can be an incredible financial burden. And so the first thing there is to watch the idea, because a lot of this is, I mean, not a lot. I mean, most of this is marketing, right? Telling us that our kids to be happy, they have to get all this stuff. And we get sucked into it because they're incredibly intelligent. They're all psychologists, these marketing geniuses, right? They know how to get us to prime us to get shopping and spend. And so we have to pull back a little bit because the season is crazy. And so we have to pull back a little bit and say, well, it's not rooted in materialism. Magic isn't rooted in materialism. Magic's rooted in our connection with each other. As I said, when we look back, we think about how we were with the people that we love. We don't think about those big things, right? And so it's like, first of all, look at that idea. And second of all, if you are going into, you know, maybe taking money, think about the best place to get that money from that doesn't put so much of a financial, because we can go for the quick fix very quickly. Think about the, you know, the thing that might be a better way of, the better avenue of getting that money.
Yeah, and look, 100%, we're not suggesting to anyone who's struggling over Christmas that they'd be better off like living on magic and that.
We're being practical, absolutely.
Listen, this is kind of into your area of one of your books is Parenting the Screenager, and you're big on phones, social media, everything else. So this is the time of year when kids want to get a phone.
Yeah.
So obviously, we're going to try and hold it off as long as possible. Like, when is it appropriate for them to get a phone, do you think? Or any tips around that?
Yeah, no, that's a really great point, Brendan, because it's a huge problem for parents. And what I would always say to parents is that as long as you can keep it out, because once it comes in, that's it. There's no way, there's no rolling back in it, right? And so as a rule, I would say, try your best to keep it till first year. Till they move into secondary school. So if you had that as a parent, as a kind of a policy in the family, so the kid knows very early on, you're not going to get a phone till first year. After first year, I would say, if they didn't have a phone by the time they went to the first year, they'd be outside their friendship group. And so you have to be careful. What you don't want to do is, you know, scapegoat your child because the parents don't like, you know, the technology. So that's very important. And so, you know, fourth class, fifth class, I would say, no, that is not the right age to be getting a phone, because the minute they take that phone into their hands, they take the world into their hands, and everything that that world has to offer is right there. And so, you know, there's so much research around this. I mean, this is not just me going, you know, be careful here. There's so much research around this that says they're too young to navigate it at that age. And so I would say, as a rule of thumb, if you can, this is if you can now, and I would say try to do it like this. First year is when you bring this stuff into your child's life, because they're a little bit older. They're still not very good at risk averse thinking at that age. They're just not, right? Mm. They don't understand in perpetuity and all these kind of things around images. But so we have to parent it, though. We have to sit down with them when you do bring it into their lives, and you do tell them that I will be from time to time checking the phone, because the research would say the more you're involved there and the more they're aware that you're involved, the less risky behavior they're going to get involved in. So it's just, again, and I always say, just the last thing is think about the child you have. If the child is showing you that they can't manage themselves, don't give it to them.
Okay. There are a lot of people texting in who have various different particular family circumstances and stuff like that makes things difficult. Just some circumstances that people might have. People who are separated kids, that can all be a bit difficult, can't it?
Very difficult. And I've worked with that for so many years now. And what I'd say to parents there is, I work with the family because I'm a systemic family therapist. So be careful about putting the pressure on the child to pick the parent to have the Christmas with. That can cause incredible intrapsychic inside the child's mind problems, because then they feel like, you know, they've favoured one and they've left one out. And so they're kind of in a limbo. They're over at the, say, mom's house or dad's house, thinking about the other parent and feeling bad that they didn't stay with the other parent.
It's pushing the child to be the adult in the situation, you're deflecting.
Yeah, you're abdicating there, you know, your responsibility as a parent, so you mustn't give that agency up. And so what I'd say to parents, and of course, when separation comes in, there's generally been conflict and lots of problems there. But as much as you can, co-parenting is such an important part. The research is very clear there, Brendan, about separation. It's in the aftermath and the build-up to where children become disturbed. So it's like how we manage ourselves in that separation will indicate whether children have a successful outcome or not. And so over Christmas, if this is the first Christmas, let's say, after you've separated this year and this is the first Christmas in separate houses, I think it's very important to come together as two parents, because you've had these beautiful children, your relationship yielded these beautiful children. It's like important that you have a conversation, say, you know, and decide what's happening during the day, who's getting at what time, so you're not putting that pressure on your child.
Yeah, so your problem, not their problem. Yeah, someone says, Brendan, we took our kids to see Santa at Tato Park yesterday. I don't even think it's called Tato Park anymore. And at one stage, our six-year-old came off the honeypot spinning ride, and my husband asked her, was she dizzy? And she said, no, Daddy, I'm not dizzy. I'm grateful. We were blown away.
Yeah, beautiful.
This is a brilliant segment. Myself and my child's father were constantly arguing about him buying something for our son every time they're together. It's completely robbing him of his joy of getting things every once in a while.
Oh, absolutely. Through a chink too wide. It's the perfect time of year.
Men are more inclined, I'd say, are they?
They absolutely are. Men are more inclined because it's such a practical fix for something. Like, if I get you that, you'll be happy. In their head, it's such an A to B situation. But again, I always think of Advent, Patrick Kavanagh, through a chink too wide, there comes in no wonder. So when we get the too wideness is giving kids everything, and so they have no wonder in life. And it's really important that we step back as parents. Saying no is a very important part of your child's development. I have it in the car and the radio. It's a joke in the family now. When they ask me for too many things, I stick on the Rolling Stones. You can't always get what you want, and the kids will sing it in the background, you know. And it's a really important thing for them to hear. You can't always get what you want. It's not good for you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's as good a message as any to go into Christmas with in our heads. And also just try not to take yourself too seriously.
Absolutely. Relax.
It's all absurd.
It's all
the whole
absurd.
Of life
the
is
whole
absurd.
Thing is
this
absurd.
Is even absurd.
This is my head.
Okay. We'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.